from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, you might associate Ed Hardy with bold, loud t-shirts and rhinestone-studded trucker hats. But Don Ed Hardy first drew attention as a barrier-breaking tattoo artist in the 1960s. He still owns a San Francisco tattoo shop with his son. We talk with Hardy about his fight to get tattooing recognized as art, the explosion of tattoos into mainstream culture, and what it's like to have a clothing brand that people love to hate. Join us for a conversation with Ed Hardy next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. The name Ed Hardy was emblazoned on everything from t-shirts to air fresheners in its heyday not too long ago, before oversaturation tainted the brand. But behind all the retail items is an artist credited with leading an explosion in tattoos and shifting our cultural understanding of the art form. Don Ed Hardy first began giving tattoos to neighborhood kids using pens and colored pencils when he was a kid himself. After graduating from the San Francisco Art Institute, he studied tattooing in Japan in the 70s and still owns Tattoo City in San Francisco's North Beach. In 2000, Hardy was appointed by then Oakland Mayor Jerry Brown to the city's Cultural Arts Commission. He recounts his journey as a tattoo artist to the name behind a multi-billion dollar clothing empire in a memoir he wrote a few years back titled Wear Your Dreams, My Life in Tattoos. And his work is also featured in Skin Deep, The Art of Tattoo, which is a new exhibit at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Welcome to the program, Ed Hardy.
Thank you.
And you grew up, so in North Beach, near Newport Beach, is that right?
Yes.
In Southern
California. Yeah, I was raised in Southern California, Corona del Mar, right a few blocks from the ocean. So.
And you were about 10 years old or so when you started tattooing neighborhood kids?
Yeah, I became fascinated with it because my best friend's dad had a bunch of tattoos. He'd been in World War II, and I was already drawing avidly. I knew that that's all I wanted to do was be an artist. And so I started, you know, doing paint on tattoos on neighborhood kids. We would go up, my buddy and I would go up the coast to the Pike in Long Beach, big amusement park where there were tattoo parlors. And I would copy the designs. And one of the tattooers there was a significant American, important American tattooer, would let us hang out. And I was just besotted with it. And I thought, well, that's what I want to do with my life. That's when I was 10 years old. So.
Who was this tattooer?
Oh, it was Bert Grimm. He was from the Midwest originally and really important guy, great sort of folk, you know, tattoo artist. It was a great sort of early education, after three years, I thought, well, I'm too young to learn to tattoo, and this is too much of a little kid thing, so I moved on to other things.
But this was in the 50s or so when you were doing this?
It was, 1955.
And I'm just curious what the typical tattoo was that kids would ask for, or would you get to pick?
Well,
what was popular?
I would draw up designs based on the flash sheets, which we call the tattoo design sheets that are displayed, and I would draw up my versions of them based on the work that I saw in the real tattoo shop. So it was eagles and anchors and patriotic stuff, a lot of stuff because it was right after World War II, you know, military insignias and, you know, dice and skulls and, you know, just populist imagery. Tattooing was always a lot of populist imagery.
What was it, do you think, that drew you in so much? What was the draw to tattooing?
I think I was obsessed with drawing. I'd been drawing since I was three avidly, and I just thought it was the craziest thing. I thought, wow, pictures on people, that's fantastic. Something, you know, totally riveted me.
It was enough that after you attended the San Francisco Art Institute, I read you turned down a spot at Yale where you could have learned engraving? Is that
right? My degree was in printmaking at the Art Institute, and I applied to some universities back east, and I had a fellowship, an assistantship to go to grad school there. But at that point, just through serendipitous happenings, I kind of reconnected with tattooing and realized I met a man in Oakland who tattooed under the name Phil Sparrow, and he showed me a book on Japanese tattooing, and I got a couple of little tattoos and then realized that it had great potential as an expressive medium and thought, I'm not going to go to grad school, I'll become a tattooer.
What was your first tattoo?
The first one I got was, a little rose, yeah, very typical, yeah, so.
And how was that experience for you of getting your first tattoo? Do you remember it being significant?
Well, yeah, it was. It was like I remember looking at it, and the guy starts tattooing. I had a little, few little hand-done tattoos that I did with a needle and India ink when I was a kid. You know, I still have a couple of them.
Whoa.
But I thought, oh, my God, I'm really getting a tattoo. And I did feel like this is some huge turning point in my life. And actually, I wasn't able to meet Sparrow the first night. A bunch of friends and I went over from the art school. And 2 days later, I kept going. I got a tattoo the second night from another tattooer in Oakland. And then the third night, I got to meet Sparrow. And he was really the first renegade intellectual that I had met in tattooing, and had been a university professor. He was part of Gertrude Stein's circle. He was close mm-hmm. with Alice Toklas. She was still alive then, and really had deep cultural, you know, pinnings. And it wasn't tattooing was just another facet of his life. So it was pretty great to, you know, be able to connect with someone like that.
And as you mentioned earlier, he introduced you to tattoos in Japan, which then actually precipitated another big turning point in your life, which was going to Japan, right, to study?
Yeah, it precipitated me getting into tattooing because my father went to Japan when I was 7 years old, and he had a job with the MacArthur occupation, and he eventually didn't come back. My mother divorced him, but he supported us, and so my entire childhood I had a lot of things from Japan, exotic things, and, you know, in the house, and so I was very interested in Japan. And then, of course, in art school, I got deeply involved in Asian aesthetics and traditions through beat culture and all that, too, you know, a lot of the kind of mindset of things, Taoism and Buddhism and all that. And so when I saw this book, Sparrow showed me this book of Japanese tattooing when he found out I was an art student. He said, oh, look at this. This is real art. And it was the first book that had been done in English on Japanese tattoo work. And it was instant. When I saw that, I thought, well, then if tattoos can be done like this, I could do that. And it instantly, you know, turned my head around, and I thought I should get back into this. I knew so much about it from when I was a kid, and it was amazing. It was like a flash of inspiration.
And that really also has driven your desire to make tattooing respected as a true art form. Mm-hmm. What was it treated like when you were starting?
It was looked down on. I mean, it was like backstreet stuff. It was something. Oh, so if you had a tattoo in those days, in the 50s on up into the 60s, it was either the questions would be, were you in the Navy or were you in jail? You know, these were the options. Or how drunk were you? I mean, it was just seen as an aberrant social behavior. It was so looked down on, and it had been demonized so heavily in the West. And in the 60s, we really, especially in the Bay Area, we were really working hard to turn things around for a human awareness and to get things more real, you know, and wipe out a lot of these bad attitudes that people had. And you know, so we, when I got into tattooing, I thought, well, then I could, this needs to be addressed as a thing that people do. It's not good or bad. I have no idea why people get tattoos. There's a million reasons, but there's no one thing. But I think it's primal. I think it's embedded in our species and is just, it appeals to some people, and it's got this powerful thing. And, of course, it had all sorts of ritualistic functions in earlier societies. It shows up globally. You know, there are all these tattooed mummies at the Metropolitan in New York. It goes back into all these cultures, but it became demonized with the onset of Judeo-Christian society in the West and is seen as a barbaric practice and stomped out.
It's interesting you're saying it's embedded in our species.
Yeah, that's a pun.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I just think that there, because you can't describe, it's like a lot of things, of something that attracts you and you think, that's terrific, that's for me. Perhaps you could intellectualize about it as much as you want, but there's no clear reason why that appeals to you and why that thing appeals to you. But I think tattooing just has some deep thing that suits certain people. It's used in societies that really utilized it as a you know, a stage in their life, a rite of passage and all that. It wasn't looked down on. You know, it served a positive function. In our society, I think that a lot of the meaningful rituals have been, wiped out or lost or, you know, become redundant. And I think tattooing appeals to people in that sense and also as a statement of individuation, and which is, I think, why people in the military, sailors would get tattooed and all that, because they were made to live a uniform life. They're all in uniform. Their identities were, you know, sunken into what I'm a sailor. That's what I am, no matter what else I am inside. So as tattoos expressing something about people, I think is very appealing to these days. There's more tattooing going on globally now than there ever has been in history. It's insane. I had no idea it would ever get to this.
And what do you make of that, that it no longer has this sort of outsider status?
Well, I think it's a positive thing in it for people. I mean, I hate to see something that if that's so popular, like, oh, I'm going to wear a green sweater this year. But once you get the tattoo, you have a tattoo. So you can't worry about how you're going to feel if it goes out of fashion because you have it, you know. But I think I'm glad to see it in a sense. I'm especially glad because the quality of tattooing going on with a lot of young tattooers, many of whom have formal art school education. They're replicating what I did, got formal art school education, and then segued into tattooing. They're independent agents. You know, they work for themselves. They're not tied into a corporate thing, which is very rare today. So I think overall it's a good thing. And again, the quality of the work and the sanitation, everything has come up so far that it's just a new world.
We're talking with tattoo artist Ed Hardy, who's also the name behind the retail brand. Hardy is credited with leading an explosion in tattoos and shifting our cultural understanding of the art form. When you came back from Japan, that experience gave you some cachet, right? You were able to open up a little private studio, and it was offering another level of tattooing.
Yeah, it was what I'd sort of aimed to do. When I got into tattooing, I wanted to make it a very, something that it wasn't, to expand its possibilities. But I tattooed in sailor towns. I tattooed a lot of, you know, hundreds and did thousands of tattoos on military guys. But then when my wife and I were able to go to Japan and I worked with a Japanese tattoo master, the convoluted thing I met through correspondence and then I asked him if I could come over to work. I met with him in Hawaii at one point for a few days and then asked if I could come and work with him. And he agreed. So we moved to Japan. I was there about 5 months. And because Japan for me was sort of the motherlode of the kind of artistry I wanted to do with this medium. And when I came back, I thought, well, I would like to do this, replicate this in the U.S. and have a private studio where it's appointment only. It's one-on-one. It's not a neon sign, you know, down in Sailor Town. And my wife, Francesca Pasalacqua, encouraged me to do it. I was spooked about it. I said, I don't know, maybe I should open a street shop and have a little private thing. She said, no, if you do that, you'll never get out of that realm. So, and she had a good job as a legal secretary and kept us afloat. And I opened this little shop and, you know, studio and behind a mattress store on Van Ness Avenue, totally away from honky tonk zones. And it was just word of mouth. It really was word of mouth. Part of that actually is what led to me, Jerry Brown knowing about me because I tattooed Peter Coyote at that stage. And like-minded people that were counterculture people and maybe people that thought a tattoo would be cool, but they didn't like going into a tattoo shop that maybe offered a limited set of imagery to fit their psyche into. And so this response began to snowball with that. That's how I met Emiko Omori as well, who did the Ed Hardy Tattoo the World movie. She's a very dear friend from those early 70s era. So it gradually changed like that, and it was very good.
Can you tell us about the Squid Man?
Oh, yeah. That was a physician, frankly, I've lost track of him. I don't know if he's still alive, but he had approached me before I went to Japan when I was still tattooing in San Diego and had the vision of – he had one big tattoo on his chest, but he had the vision of doing a body tattoo. He wanted to use a squid where the tentacles could wrap around, you know, his limbs. And so when I got back from Japan, he decided to do that. So he was one of my first customers for sort of an epic body tattoo. And I did it on him at the Van Ness studio. He'd come up from Los Angeles and, you know, periodically, and we'd do a few hours and he'd come back a month later and do a few hours. So, but it was really, it caused a big stir in the tattoo world at that time and got included in one of the early books about contemporary tattooing. It was a cover image. So, but that was my specialty. I just would tell people, come in and tell me, what's your idea? What would you get if you could get anything as a tattoo? And I'd be happy to draw it up.
So. Did you ever say, that's a terrible idea for a tattoo? You don't
want
that tattoo.
Well, yeah. I mean, I always, even and especially in the street days, with the caliber of people I was tattooing or the sensibility of the people I tattooed here in the private studio, I didn't have this. But in the street days, you get people coming and asking for things. You know, I wasn't going to tattoo swastika because I wasn't going to tattoo Born to Raise Hell. I was going to tattoo, you know, negative stuff like that. You have to, you know, watch out for a lot of those things. But basically, people brought astounding ideas and it broadened my drawing ability and my sense of what could be art you know, radically. It was great.
And you had a rule that you would not tattoo people who were inebriated?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Because too many regrets.
Yeah, exactly. Although one time I was tattooing a sailor one time, and he and his buddy, and this is before the private studios in San Diego, and his buddy came up and looked at him and said, well, I thought you were going to get such and such the other design on the wall. And he said, well, this one's okay. And I said, I was halfway in the tattoo. I said, this isn't the design you picked? And he looked at me and I realized his eyes were just like fireworks and they were on acid, you know. So some of those things, it's not like, yeah, that guy's drunk. There's no way of telling on some of those things.
We're talking with tattoo artist Ed Hardy, who first drew attention as a barrier-breaking tattoo artist in the 1960s, and he owns a San Francisco tattoo shop now. He fought to get tattooing recognized as art and is credited with bringing respect to tattooing as an art form. You might also know him as the man behind the brand, Ed Hardy. And I'd like to invite you to join the conversation with Ed Hardy. Our number is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. Post them on Facebook, on our website, kqed.org/forum, or you can tweet us. We're at KQED Forum. Tell us about tattoos. What do they mean to you? Do you have one? Your experience with Ed Hardy's work, whether or not you ever owned any of his retail items that saturated the market in the last 10 years or so. Ed Hardy, I actually want to talk to you about that. This was a brand that you saw early on when it came out on the market. Mm-hmm. It took off. I mean, you had stars like Madonna and Catherine Zeta-Jones wearing mm-hmm. Ed Hardy, mm-hmm. and it just started to be everywhere on everything from clothes to shoes to air fresheners to perfumes. Was that your vision for the brand when you first decided to, you know, sell the license essentially to your name?
No. How that came about is there was a cover article in an art magazine about a painting show that I had in Los Angeles. And some people in LA saw it that had a small casual clothing company that was based in Japan. And they approached me to put my images on clothes, and I wasn't interested. I said, no, I design T-shirts for the tattoo shop. I'm not into that. But they were very sincere guys, a Japanese partner and then a L.A. guy. And they came up and saw my shop, and they saw they were blown away when they saw the, you know, wealth of images there. And they sort of had the vision, and they were very nice. They had a good business plan. And I thought, well, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's not costing me anything, and I have the images already drawn. So they began doing this, marketing some of these items, and after about a year, it caught the attention of, and they were having great success with it, and they actually said, you know, if we really had deep financial backing, this could be insanely popular. And to me, it was surreal, as a lot of things in my life have been. It was like, well, really? Okay. So, but it caught the eye of Christian Audigé, who was a really, you know, blood and thunder promoter in the pop fashion scene. He'd been with this Von Dutch brand, who was a famous car pinstriper in the 50s. It was one of my culture heroes.
That's right. Yeah.
So he and Christian actually saw their shop in LA on Melrose and bought a T-shirt and then got wild. And he thought, I must have this brand. So he wanted to get the master license. So we basically formed a consortium and gave him the license. And because he was so linked in with all that pop culture in LA, it just took off like a rocket. He opened the first Ed Hardy store there, and within 6 months, it had blown up. It was absolutely fantastic. I had no idea. It took me by surprise, absolutely.
So how did it feel then for it to become a brand that started to be described as almost representing bad taste? Like it became you yourself have said that morons dehumanize it, I think was a quote in one of the reports where you talked about how it had been character associated, right, with folks that were less than what you would like to see.
Yeah, exactly. But then that's out of your hands. It's like if somebody gets a tattoo that you thought you did as a genuine, to you, a great piece of art, and they do something horrible. That's them. That's not the art. Didn't cause it. And yeah, when it hit Jersey Shore, which a show I never saw, but I know what it's all about. And it was unfortunate for me to see. I was kind of dismayed to see it mixed up with this totally negative meathead behavior, you know. But what are you going to do? The work was out there. I don't think it wasn't like that made them be the way they were. It was just, they just picked up on sort of potential negative aspects that those classic kinds of tattoo designs could do, because most of the images were on things that I painted up for service guys in the late 60s, you know, early 70s, and not very little of my more developed, you know, personal art was ever used on that, but I have an image bank of thousands of things, so it's, you know, it was just the way it went. And then yes, it got, and then Christian Audigé himself was such a, you know, gold plate, like hustler, you know, driven guy. And to him, if it gets attention, it's good. You know, it's that kind of mindset. And he eventually just pushed it over by allowing it to get, associating it with a lot of people that were, you know, bad representatives. It made my art look bad. So
ultimately, you did, though, file a lawsuit, and the two of you have settled with
regard to that. And eventually, my original partners and I sold the master license, transferred it to some other people, and it's actually in the hands of a brand management company in New York now, and they're focusing on the overseas market, so it's very much alive there, and it's so convoluted that, frankly, I can't keep track of
sure,
all the things,
but
it's going on.
It's so convoluted, but do you feel like you have reasserted some control over it?
Yeah, we did, absolutely. When we shifted, when we took, Christian was still in charge of a lot of the stuff, but again, we took the master license and sold it to some other people.
How about in terms of how it's understood as a brand? Have you felt like you've been able to?
That I don't really know, because it's not, I don't think it's going on much at all domestically. I know I've seen garments and things that they're doing for the market in India and China, which are the big grounds of it. They're Ed Hardy stores in China now. And the workmanship is terrific. The sort of, it's very inventive, the way the clothes are made. And so, that was fine.
Well, Cherry writes, please tell Mr. Hardy how I loved his great long dragon painting shown at Yerba Buena several years ago.
Oh, okay. Yes. So you're reading somebody. Well, that's great. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. And actually, we're trying to figure out a way to perhaps show that at the JCCSF, where the current tattoo show is on, the other night for the screening of Emiko Omori's film, The Ed Hardy Tattoo the World, which drew a big crowd. They asked whether it might be possible to exhibit it there. I would love to do it, because it's just been in storage. It's a 500-foot-long painting of 2,000 dragons. I did it in the millennial year. I thought about it since 1976, which was another dragon year, and then decided to do this form of a 4-foot-high by 500-foot-long continuous painting. And it's gotten great attention wherever we've been able to show it, but it takes a fair amount of space. And I'm thrilled to hear that people like it.
Yeah, and again, that exhibit you're talking about is Skin Deep, The Art of Tattoo at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, which runs through January 20th. It's free and open every day for folks who want to check it out. Again, we're talking with tattoo artist Ed Hardy, who is also the name behind the retail brand. He's credited with leading an explosion in tattoos and shifting our cultural understanding of it. We'll take more of your questions and comments after the break. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Stay with us. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking with legendary tattoo artist Ed Hardy, who's also the name behind the retail brand. And his work is being featured in an exhibit called Skin Deep, The Art of Tattoo at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. And we have David J. De La Torre on the line right now with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to talk with you a little bit about your exhibit. I understand that there are quite a few things you wanted to achieve with this. Can you talk about those goals?
Right. We wanted to present basically an educational exhibition that would demonstrate the roots of tattoo making. And so this goes back to ancient times. So we are covering quite a lot of ground, but the punchline is contemporary art.
In the focus, there is quite a bit of focus on Japan. Can you talk about that, the reason to include that, and the importance of its influence?
Yes. Well, There's a deeply rooted history in Japanese culture for tattoo traditions, and Don Ed Hardy would be one to to know this because he studied Japanese tattoo traditions and really, I think, was an impetus for the work that he did in San Francisco, which has become, you know, this sort of global phenomenon. It goes way back to Japanese woodblock traditions, and that was something that inspired tattoo artists to do their work.
And the show is dedicated to the late Paula Kirkaby. Who is Paula Kirkaby?
Paula Kirkaby was the founder and the director of Smith Anderson Editions, which was a small Northern California print shop in Palo Alto. And Paula was just an extraordinary person. She passed away last spring, and that was a great loss to the art community because of the work that she did with regional artists in producing high-quality prints and etchings and lithographs.
This is an art exhibit. Do you feel like tattooing is firmly considered a powerful visual art form now, or do you feel like there's still detractors or people who question its legitimacy in the art world? David?
That's an interesting question. What I found in organizing the show is that there is a distinction between the tattooer and the artist in kind of a conceptual way. There are those that consider tattooing their primary focus, and then there are those that consider themselves artists and that tattooing is a medium that they use along with painting and drawing on paper. So I found that there was a wide range of things that people are doing now as it relates to tattooing. It's become quite a phenomenon.
Well, congratulations on the show. Again, that's Skin Deep, the Art of Tattoo at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, which runs through January 20th, and you can see a lot of Don Ed Hardy's work there. Thank you, David De La Torre.
Thank you so much.
And let's hear what our listeners have to say. Jesse in Pengrove. Hi, Jesse.
Hi. Yeah, I'm excited to be on the line with Don Ed Hardy. It's pretty cool. I'm a tattooer in the North Bay, and the KQED junkie, so it's cool to call in. But my question is that I just wanted to hear Mr. Hardy's opinion about how social media has influenced the craft of tattooing and sort of how, in my opinion, I feel like it's sort of turning away from a meritocracy and sort of turning into an internet popularity contest of sorts. So I'd just really be interested to hear his opinion about that.
Thanks. Well, yeah, social media obviously has impacted it greatly, as it has everything else. And it's fantastic, I think, in a lot of ways, of people being able to directly share their imagery, you know, the tattooers, the work they're doing. And so that I think that's a good thing. There's been a great deal more understanding and growth of terrific work by the artists. I know a lot of younger tattooers bemoan the thing like, well, now there are too many people tattooing, or now it's not so exclusive or something. But that's been going on ever since, you know, way, way, way back. So you can't escape that. But I do think it's spread intelligent knowledge and, you know, opened up possibilities for tattooing with people who are thinking of getting a tattoo as well as the people doing it.
Well, Jesse, thanks for your question. And let's go to Rob in Sunnyvale. Hi, Rob.
Hi, thank you for taking my call and good to talk to Mr. Hardy. I would like to know if he could elaborate on scarification and using human remains, ash, as a way of packing to derive color in the scars. And,
There's always been a lot of interest with this whole rise of what was kind of called that new tribalism thing. My friend Vail published a book about that in the whatever early 80s. I don't relate to scarification. It's not to me. I mean, it's on the body. That's its connection to tattooing. And I hadn't heard about the thing about human ashes. I mean, I have heard instances of people getting a bit of ashes mixed in with the ink from, you know, some loved one to get a tattoo. But I don't really have an opinion about it. It's kind of outside my realm.
Well, Rob, thanks for raising an interesting avenue of body art. Well, Jean writes, I'm glad this discussion is happening while impressionable kids or teens are in school. My opposition to tattoos is mostly driven by the fact that they are permanent. I think they should not be visible on anyone in a professional setting. When young people are insistent on getting a tattoo, I think it's a bad idea because they may regret it when they get older. Well, Ben comments, and this kind of raises this question, does your guest have any tattoos that he regrets? What does he think about removing or covering up tattoos?
Well, it's up to everybody's personal decision. The tattoos I have that I regret are very, very early pieces that I got. And in my passion to get Japanese-style work, I had them buried under black, you know, quasi-Japanese clouds. And I wish I had the original pieces. There's several small things on my upper arms. I think the whole thing of visibility, for one thing, obviously tattoos have grown so exponentially on a global level that people in all walks of life are getting them. I don't think people should be demonized for wearing them. I know they do make people uncomfortable. A lot of people don't like to see tattoos, and maybe that'll change. I think that it does limit you if you have tattoos showing, if it's visible all the time and it's disconcerting to someone seeing it, you can't change that. I mean, it's just what happens. I am sort of dismayed to see the extent of everybody being tattooed, you know, stem to stern. I think it's within the power of an employer to say, well, we don't want employees to have these tattoos showing your hands are all tattooed or it's all the way up to your eyebrows or whatever. It's just a thing of personal taste, and I know a lot of people rebel about that. But you can't pretend that. I mean, it's Halloween for life, you know. So you can't change that. You're not going to change that. They are repellent to a lot of people. They're disconcerting to a lot of people. That's just the way it is.
Well, you've said that tattoos always tell you more about the people looking at them than the person wearing them.
Yes.
What did you mean?
Because people have sets of assumptions about that. Well, a person's tattooed, therefore they are, you know, something. They're not of my, you know, social set or whatever. It's a very volatile thing. Again, because they're permanent, because it's not like, gee, you've changed your eyeliner, you've got different lipstick, or you've got, you know, whatever. Your sweater is different today.
Well, I've also heard you say this, which is that you can only really know about the tattoo by getting to know the person wearing it, that tattoos are what you call little vents to their psyche.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel. It's with anything. It's like racism. It's with anything. Well, this person's different from me, and I think they probably are like this. But you have to get up close with the person themselves and see how it goes.
What's it like that you're masterpieces live on other people's bodies, that they're not necessarily something that you hang up? I mean, you're doing more printmaking now, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, I am. My whole focus now is on my personal art. My painting and printmaking has been. I tattooed for 40 years. That was enough. Because of the brand, I was able financially to not depend on putting on tattoos, and I'm proud of the work I did with it, but it's great to get back to my own art. I did really start refocusing on that probably, you know, 25 years ago before I stopped tattooing. The thing with the bodies, I love the fact that they're impermanent, that they are for this life, and you can't be attached to it. It's like, here it is, and then it's going to be gone, you know. So that never bothered me.
Again, we're talking with tattoo artist Ed Hardy, who's also doing printmaking now. And where can folks, if they want to see your prints, your more recent work, go?
Well, I'm painting and printmaking. I'm working with master printmakers in both Bud Shark in Colorado and Paul Maloney here in San Francisco. And that was my undergraduate degree. I specialized in etching and engraving. And so I'm doing a variety of prints, but I'm painting a lot as well. And I've been showing my personal art in galleries a great deal over the last 25 years. And I've got a website that's donedhardyart.com. that showcases a lot of my recent paintings from the last few years. And I'm not currently with a gallery, but I'm sort of working, interviewing different people. And I had a show in San Francisco that just closed about a week ago. So that's my main focus now in life.
And let's hear more from our listeners. And again, that number is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Our email is forum@kqed.org, and our website is kqed.org/forum. Andy in San Jose. Hi, Andy.
Hi. Ed tattooed my older brother in the 80s and into the early 90s. He did an epic Japanese back piece, a geisha with a flowing kimono riding a dragon. And I became interested in having something done. And one day I asked my brother for the name of that famous tattooer, and I called the number of Tattoo City, and a guy answered the phone, and I told him I wanted to do artwork based on a type of fine painting from the 20s. Nothing representational, no black outlines, just a blended color. And the guy said, hey, that sounds great. I said, well, do you think Ed will do it? He goes, well, this is Ed. So that's how I met Ed Hardy, and I described what I wanted to do, and I came and met him and showed him photographs of art by Stanton McDonald Wright and Morgan Russell and the Delaunays, Robert and Sonia, and Jacques Vion, Marcel Duchamp's brother, who all worked in pure color. He did a design. He went home to Hawaii. He came back 3 months later, or 6 weeks later, I don't remember. And I sat down for what turned into a three-hour session. He did a blended color piece about the size of a softball on the small of my back. And we talked throughout about art history, and as he worked on me, the body reacts to the pain of the needle by flooding you with endorphins, and it becomes a very magical place to be. And our relationship has continued to be something that I treasure, and it's wonderful to have him talk on the radio so more people can understand what the experience is like.
Well, thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Andy. It's great to hear from you. You know, it's
thanks,
always
Ed.
Nice to know that an old friend is still vertical. It has my
heart. Hey, yeah, I'm still on the piece. Still looks is still a source of.
Yeah, we have to get together.
Pleasure.
Thanks for calling in.
I'll call you.
All right, good.
Jared asks, who was the Irezumi tattoo master that you studied with in Japan?
I studied with Horihide Kazu Oguri in Gifu City. He was one of the first Japanese people to reach out to the West and published kind of a newsletter. He had a good translator, a newsletter in English that sort of made its way around. And he had a fantastic influence on Western tattooing because he really opened up what had been a very, very hermetic world over there. And it was a great thrill to be able to work with him. I was the first guy to go over and do that. And then that led to also showcasing. When we began publishing, I started publishing the first ever tattoo journal magazine, Tattoo Time, in 1982, and went on. And the popularity of that over about 12 years really fired the international explosion of interest in this. But Horihide was a great guy, and I was also able to work with Horiyoshi II, Mr. Kuranuma in Tokyo, who was like the greatest tattooer in Japan. I got a large tattoo from him. I got a large tattoo from Horihide. So it was wonderful to get a view into this very, very private, hidden world, because tattooing is still, to a degree, kept underground in Japan. And in those days, you know, in the 60s and 70s, it was really, really kept underground.
Is there a tattoo that you have that you feel like says the most about you, if it is a window into the person's psyche?
Well, I mean, they all are very meaningful to me. One of my favorites is I have a big portrait of my wife, Francesca Pasolacco, on my thigh that I got from Jack Rudy in East L.A. when I became totally knocked out by this, fine line black and gray tattooing that these guys established in East Los Angeles. I eventually bought the shop, and that was great to get a photo portrait of Francesca. And I've got portraits of some of my favorite Buddhist deities on my ribs, and they all mean something to me. They're all little markers, you know.
Another listener writes, you say you garner inspiration from traditional art and tattooing in Japan. Can you talk about your take on cultural appropriation?
Well, I think everyone shares ideas with art. I mean, like, I'm so interested in art of the world, and I love to be able to. When I go in and I see a piece of art, whether it was made 2,000 years ago or 6 months ago, it's a transmission of that person's psyche or soul or vision direct, without language, without ethnicity, without geography. And it just knocks me out. My main deal in life is going around and looking at art and feeling a connection to these people. And they might have been dead for a long time, but their work lives on. And it's really, I mean, it's a little maybe hippy-dippy to say that, but it is a pretty cosmic transmission. And I don't feel bad about being, say, if I'm going to take a piece of art and base it on like a Chicano image or a Japanese image or whatever. I'm just like a clueless white boy from Orange County, you know. I wasn't raised with any strong tradition of anything, but what really fired me up was seeing some of these great cultural traditions from very deep cultures. And I was I tried to ride along a little bit with it and not do it a disservice by interpreting it.
A listener writes, I may have missed it, but it seems ironic that the exhibit is at the JCC. Culturally, Jews aren't supposed to get tattoos. And actually, we're getting several emails along this line, and the JCC wanted to provide us with this. The JCCSF engages with contemporary Bay Area culture where tattoos can be an important form of self-expression. We understand that for many Jewish people, tattoos represent the dark Holocaust period of 20th century history, and for others, religious law prohibits tattooing. The JCCSF understands all of these points of view and remains a place where different expressions of identity are explored. Tattooing has always been a controversial activity in Jewish culture. Despite a Torah prohibition, we know that some members of the community engaged in inking throughout history. As tattoos have become more popular in Western culture, Jews have joined their peers under the needle in great numbers. And this is related to the JCCSF's exhibit, Skin Deep, The Art of Tattoo, which is right now running through January 20th. And we're talking with Ed Hardy, legendary tattoo artist and the name that you might recognize behind the retail brand. Let's go next to Matthew in Berkeley. Hi, Matthew.
Hey there, Mr. Hardy. I just wanted to thank you. I had the pleasure of going over to 111 Minute Gallery a couple weeks ago, and your show that was hanging there was beautiful. It just so happened also that was the reception for the convention. I got to see a lot of phenomenal tattooers from the Bay Area and around the world. People who have gotten tattooed by, like, Grime, amazing folks. And I was lucky enough to pick up one of your prints, the Our Gang print. So I just wanted to thank you.
Well, thanks very much. Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Of course, my personal art is foremost in my – that's what I'm all about these days. It's like I don't, you know, disavow any of the tattooing and that, but I work in so many different styles, and a lot of the imagery was you know, it's taken from various tattoo traditions and different cultures. But that was a terrific show. And I love having my personal art seen. So,
yeah, it's great. It's actually a gift for a tattooer of mine, my buddy Nick up in Arcata, True Nature Tattoo. Phenomenal guy. And he's going to be really surprised and pleased to have a piece of your artwork. So thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Matthew. And we go to Zach in Lafayette. Hi, Zach.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I was curious if Mr. Hardy thought that there might be a market or a demand for, like, higher-end, higher-art temporary tattoos.
I have no idea. There probably would be. There have been a lot of amazing things done with temporary tattoos over the years, especially over the last 20 years with various people. But I don't really know. I mean, Let's give it a shot, you know. The whole thing
awesome.
Is distribution. Yeah.
Hey, that's all I need to hear. Words of encouragement from the man himself. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good luck with it.
Zach, thanks. Thanks for the call. Allison asks, I really appreciate Mr. Hardy's attitude about how his work has been interpreted, passed around, worn, and shared. Apart from the Ed Hardy brand association with Jersey Shore, have there been any other instances where Mr. Hardy felt like his work had been too removed from its original intent?
Well, not that I really know about. I mean, I couldn't answer that because I don't know how people take it. I know it has had impact. I've always been pleasantly surprised to see the images passed around or admired or understood or, you know, but I don't know.
Well, let's go to Deborah in Marin. Hi, Deborah.
Yes, hi. Hi. First of all, I want to say thank you so much. The subject of this program is fantastic. I am a mother of a 23-year-old daughter. Adopted daughter, and she snuck out and got her first tattoo when she was 18, much to my anger, and whew, I was really surprised. She covered it up for the longest time because she knew I didn't like it, and I slowly grew to appreciate it as she showed me what it was. What's your comment about how it's a window into the psyche? Being adopted, her first tattoo was her name, her original birth name, which was Spasova in Bulgarian. And she had, it was so important to her to have this name put on her arm, her origins. And she also had a rose intertwined with the text, which is, roses are very, very important in Bulgaria. And I just think it's such a wonderful thing now, and I really love tattoos, and she has helped me and brought me there, that I'm tempted to get one myself. And that's all I really have to say. And I'm going to take her, actually, to this exhibit. I think this exhibit sounds fantastic.
Great.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, terrific. It is. It should be a very, very, you know, positive thing. It should be a thing that reinforces your sense of yourself and solidarity with others, and that's what it's about.
Thanks, Deborah. Are you still getting tattoos, Donovan?
No, I mean, I've got a bunch of space left, but sometimes when I see these people and they're not even 30 years old and I go, yeah, I'm almost done, almost covered. I said, you know, this is something that means a lot to you and you might live to get kind of old and you might want to have a buddy of mine, Bob Roberts, a great L.A. painter and tattooer, used to say that having that clean skin is like having money in the bank. You know, it's like if a need arises, you think, boy, I want to get this tattoo. Something significant happens. You meet someone. You want to mark being in a place and you've got the space for it. So I don't plan on getting any more, but you never know.
And let's go to Jane in Marin. Hi, Jane.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say I'm a great admirer of your art. I happened upon an exhibit in Fort Mason a few years ago, and I was blown away. I had no idea that you did, you know, paintings as well as the clothing line. And I have some of your clothing. A Moroccan friend and I happened into the Ed Hardy store in San Francisco as it was going out of business, I'm so sorry to say. And we got carried away trying things on, and she's very beautiful and I'm not bad, and the two of us were trying things on, and the next thing, the store was full of people and they all wanted, I want what she's trying on, and we walked out with sweatshirt jackets with Love Kills on the back of them and sweatpants to this day. They're full of paint and raggedy on the bottom. One's got a hole in the butt. I won't part with either one of them. The imagery is so beautiful. You're just a wonderful artist. I can't wait to check out your website, go to the Jewish Center and see all of it. And thank you. I just wish the clothing was more readily available. I'm not one. I don't want to tattoo my skin. I put a decal on once and I couldn't wait to get it off, but I would love a t-shirt that was all of your beautiful imagery.
Well, Jane, thanks. And I think you're
available?
Yeah, I think you're not alone, because Barbara is writing in and saying, I bought Ed Hardy sneakers a few years ago, didn't know his name. I just liked them and was amazed when people would stop me in airports and restaurants asking, are those Ed Hardy? Then I went to look for them, bought two more pairs and wore them into the ground. Loved them. Just gorgeous. Well, maybe...
Yeah, I never, as I say, this is in the hands of these brand management people, and it's all, I mean, I would love to see it continue to grow and replicate, but, you know, there's no telling.
So. And let's go to Nathan in Oakland. Hi, Nathan.
Hey, how's it going, Ed?
Good.
Oh, great. My question's real quick. I've got a couple of friends who are getting married out in Livermore, California this weekend. Aaron and Hannah, congrats to them. Have you ever seen people do symbolic tattoos together? Any stories like that?
I have seen couples that get, you know, a variant of the same image to sort of, it's like they're, you know, exchanging vows and wedding rings or something. I think that happens, yeah.
Very cool. Well, hey, love your work, and I really appreciate you letting me on the air.
Well, Nathan, thanks for calling in. And Jennifer writes, it's great to hear your voice. We have some of your etchings hanging in our home, as well as a great painting of our dad that you did a long time ago. I'm so glad to hear you're etching again. The basket of feathers you made back in the 70s is one of my most treasured pieces of art.
Wow, I love hearing that. That's actually a piece from about 1964 when I was getting my undergraduate degree under Gordon Cook. And I wish I knew if there's any way you could contact the tattoo shop or whatever and send a picture of the painting of your dad. I don't know which one that was, but that's very early work of mine. I still keep some of those plates. I've got the etchings, and I'm thrilled when people respond to my own, what I'd call, you know, high art realm, things away from the tattooing. So thank you.
Do you still mentor folks, Ed Hardy, for, you know, tattoo artists, up-and-coming tattoo artists at Tattoo City?
Not formally, no. I don't. I know I still have some influence and put in my two bits with a lot of people showing me their work. And specifically, I'm interested in the terrific paintings and artwork and other mediums that these people are doing that extend beyond their tattoo work. And that's really, really makes me feel terrific.
And what are, if you are in a position of mentoring them, what are the pieces of advice you try to give?
Boy, I can't put that into 25 words or less. It's just be true to yourself and respond to positive things and look at as much art as you possibly can, you know.
And I know you said that, you know, people get tattoos for so many different reasons, but having encountered so many people have come to you asking for them, mm-hmm. What do you find are the most frequent reasons people get tattoos?
to celebrate some aspect of their life, some aspect of themselves or something that's happened in their life as like a commemorative thing. And they're memories. You know, it's kind of like when I was a little kid, people would travel in their cars and they'd get like stickers and they'd put them on the wind wing or the window and it'd say like, I've been to Big Sur, I've been to Idaho. That's what the tattoos are like, you know. So they're kind of they're a memory of something that happened in your life and that's significant.
Well, I'll try to fit this comment in from Jonathan. He says, having lived in Japan myself, I'm aware that tattoo art is associated with the Yakuza and organized crime and is generally regarded as worthy of moral reproach and even discrimination. Was this part of your experience when you were living in Japan?
Yes. Yeah, a lot of our customers were Yakuza when I was working there. It's just tattooing was an essential part of the great flowering of Japanese culture in the Edo period in the late 18th, early 19th century. And that's when the real tattoo form became formulated there, all based on the great woodblock prints, Kuniyoshi, Hokusai, all those people. And unfortunately, it became demonized in Japanese society and sort of relegated to people more connected with the underworld. And it still has, it's slowly coming out of that, slowly coming out of in Japan among the populace, and also complex reasons about the sanctity of being human and this unblemished body your parents gave you. It's very, you know, 50-page treatise on that.
Well, Tex writes, every tattooer working today owes Hardy a debt of gratitude for helping to fundamentally change the way we see bodies and tattoo art. Well, Don Ed Hardy, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. And I'm Mina Kim. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.